What we changed with that was there was some concern about, and even in our research showed that right now our current ordinance allows for five false alarms before there's any fines assessed. That is what we found is not really the norm. It's normally around three, and so that's what we did with our ordinance. We're proposing that we reduce that number to three before there begin to be fines assessed for excessive false alarms. And also, our ordinance did not provide for any increase in that assessed fine. It just went on and on and on at that same $50 rate. And so we changed that to the first three would be, as they are now, with no charge, the first three false alarms. After that, then the fine would be assessed at an amount of $50 for the fourth and the fifth alarm. And the sixth through the seventh would be a fine of $75. And the eighth alarm on would be assessed at a rate of $100 per false alarm. And that's in excess in a 12-month period.
And then something that was discussed in September that's in the proposal, too, is that there will be a third party that will be administering the collection of the fines.
Yes. What we intend to propose is that we hire a third-party vendor to, much as the city of Bryan has done, to administer the and manage that alarm process. And that is primarily to ensure that they'll follow up on ensuring that the assessed fines are actually paid. To kind of monitor that, to make sure that, you know, those things are done in a timely manner, and to kind of manage that whole process. So it's that as well as a staffing issue. It would allow our staff, our in-house staff, to be redirected to other tasks.
And the third party would be paid out of the fines that are collected?
Yes. That they would normally, the way that worked, they receive a certain percentage of whatever the fines that are collected, yes.
Has there been any consideration to how this would be implemented if the council passes it?
Implemented
as what the timeline might be?
I'm not exactly sure what that timeline would be, and I would assume that the council could set a time whenever they would want that to become effective. I believe that in most cases, ordinances are become effective within 30 days, I believe, but I'm not exactly sure. But there would be some timeline, and then we would also, if it is passed, we would do some public education, public service type things, try to make sure that our citizens are aware of the changes. Make sure they are aware. So we wouldn't immediately start, doing assessing those type fines or whatever. There would be, in my view, probably at least a 30-day window to give us an opportunity to either through mail-outs, putting it on our web page and those types of things to educate our citizens on what the new procedures will be.
Refresh my memory, how many alarm systems that – any idea how many are at least registered, if not an estimate, for College Station?
We don't have registration, so I really don't know how many there are.
The number of alarm calls that PD has made then?
Over the course of the years, we typically average somewhere 2,300 or so alarm calls, false alarm calls per year. So it is... it takes up a lot of our resources responding to those calls, and so that's why we're trying to do. And this is something that's not unique to College Station. It's a nationwide issue. You'll see police departments, police chiefs spending a lot of time trying to address these types of issues, but particularly as it pertains to false alarms. So it takes up a lot of resources. Answering those calls, and so we're trying to recapture that time so, again, we can redeploy those resources to more proactive-type duties.
And that's not only on the streets, too. You also mentioned the office, the administrative side, too.
Absolutely. Our in-house staff that is currently trying to keep up with that, we have a very limited staff that is trying to do that at this point in time. And so I think it would be more efficient and effective to have a third-party vendor to manage that, and then we could redirect our in-house staff to do other things.
Did your research show how departments improved or the number of false alarms going down or the efficiencies that were gained about being a little more aggressive about this?
Sure. From everything that I've seen, from what I've been able to determine, in cities where they have aggressively addressed these, there's been some reduction in the number of false alarms. And so on this one, that's what we're trying to accomplish, again, to so we can better utilize those resources we have to more proactive and more productive type activities.
Anything else that I've missed in your studying the last 2 or 3 months?
No, that's pretty much it. Our goal is to recapture that time, to reallocate our resources, and then better monitor those fines that are being assessed, and have some follow-up to be able to follow up to make sure that those fines that are being assessed are being actually collected, and in hopes of getting that compliance. It would be great for us for this number to go down to zero. So I mean, we're really hoping to have some impact on that. So for us, it's not so much a matter of the collecting the fines and the fees. For the police department, it is a matter of collecting, capturing that time that we're losing responding to those false alarms and being able to direct those officers on the street to be more proactive in their patrols, in our neighborhood associations, and all of those other things that we are, encouraging them to get involved in.
One other thing before, and I almost forgot this, what's going to be the description of a false alarm versus something that might be weather-triggered or something that's out of a property owner's hands?
Typically what we find in most cases is that simply someone doesn't know the alarm code, which is typical for businesses where they have a turnover and the person, the employee doesn't know the alarm code, so they can't deactivate it. Faulty alarms where, for whatever reason, the alarm might be set too sensitive, and so it is repeatedly being activated. And we do have a process in place to where the alarm can be canceled. We are very liberal in trying to make an assessment on whether or not we actually count this alarm toward, the number before we get to the part where there are actually fines assessed. So, it's not something that we try to be real hardcore about, but we really try to encourage our business owners and our residential customers to be familiar with the alarm process, to know the codes, to know how to deactivate it, to know how to contact the alarm monitoring company. And if it is indeed a false alarm, again, there's a process in place to where the alarm company can recontact us if they are able to make contact with the homeowner or the business owner and verify that there's actually nothing going on, to call us back, and through a code that they were given when they initially called in, they can cancel the alarm and it won't be counted against them. We wanted to try to incorporate what we got from what our council wanted without having just a wholesale change in our ordinance. There are a lot of ordinances that I looked at that were a lot more detailed, a lot more, I think, complicated and cumbersome, maybe more difficult for the citizens to understand. So we tried to make this as plain and straightforward as we can get it.